gentlemen of the jury, the prosecution is not going to get that man today. No, because I'm going to get him.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to this edition of the Hagman and Hagman Report. We have a special broadcast lined up for you tonight. You know, not too many Americans were paying attention or paid attention last week when the United States decided not to veto UN Resolution 2334, and that was the resolution that basically threw Israel under the bus. Now, I shouldn't say threw. It did throw Israel under the bus. This is Obama, Kerry, her predecessor, of course, Clinton, Samantha Power, Susan Rice, that crowd, and the globalists as well. Now, America's got a long history of doing certain things, but not quite as in-your-face, overt, and telling as this. We have author, and in my view, expert on all things Israel when it comes to America and Israel, author John P. McTernan. Here's his book, folks, As America Has Done to Israel. And this book here, when the events of Friday happened, of course, we had a different program Friday. However, we took notice here in the studio, and we talked about this, and we talked about what was going on with the United Nations, with the United States, United Nations, and Israel, of course. And I'll tell you something. We need to be paying close attention to this, because it is critical. And I was reading the various political websites and blogs and opinion pieces. And let me tell you something. People don't have a clue. The majority of people out there are clueless. They conflate political Zionism with the Israel of the Bible. They conflate, it's just a mess. And it's resulting in anti-Semitism like no other time in history, in American history, and world history. So with us is John P. McTiernan. Before we get to John, I just want to mention that, of course, folks, check our website, HagmanReport.com daily. That's HagmanReport.com daily. I hope everyone did have a Merry Christmas, by the way. This is our first broadcast after Christmas. We did not do a broadcast on Christmas. It wasn't in the card. So I just, you know, thank you for bearing with us and with me on that. I'd also like to wish a happy birthday to Maggie, longtime listener, good friend of the program. God bless you. And of course, JD, our videographer, celebrated his birthday on Saturday, Christmas Eve. And, so definitely want to extend our great warm birthday wishes to JD from the Hagman Report as well. And, all of you, I just hope and pray that you had a wonderful Christmas, and, this 2017 will be a good year for all of us. Again, two websites, HagmanReport.com, Hagman and Hagman.com. That's for show information. The latter for show information. And of course, follow us on our social networking feeds. I've got one personally, Douglas Hagman. And then Hagman Report has one, and Twitter as well, both on Facebook and Twitter. So, just to say that, and let me just check to see if that's pretty much all of the housekeeping that we've got. By the way, we've got just a terrific week lined up for you. So, but our guest, John P. McTernan, is going to be spending the next couple of hours with us. Now, Mr. McTernan is a former U.S. Treasury agent. He's a longtime American history buff, studied American history, lifetime studying, history, world history, I should say. He has a website. His website is usaprophecy.com and others as well off of that. Links to John's website, his book, where you can buy his book, everything is in our show description and on our website at HagmanReport.com. So please visit there. And if there's any purchase I'd be making right now after Christmas, it's this book right here. It's this one. As America Has Done to Israel. I reread it this weekend. And let me tell you something, tonight's going to be an important broadcast. So without any further ado, Mr. John McTernan, thanks so much for holding through, waiting. And, John, it's good to see you, man.
Well, I can't see you.
I know.
It's good talking to you.
Well,
we might as well start off on a funny note.
Absolutely. You know, as soon as the news of the United States, what they did to Israel, was made public, I thought of you, and you've been on the program before. We've spoken about the subject before, but John, I'm going to just let you kind of lay the groundwork, or you're a radio pro, so how do we start off with, how do we start out talking about this? There's so many different ways we could kind of get into this, but
the way I like to start off with it is to show how unique the nation of Israel is. Now, if we know anything about history, the nation of Israel, I'm going to use the word, was reborn on May 14th, 1948. So most of your listeners are not old enough to remember a time when Israel was not a nation. Mm-hmm. So for those people, it's very easy for them to accept, well, Israel is just like any other nation. In the United States, you got Washington is the capital, and London, you've got, Great Britain, you've got London, and Russia, you've got Moscow and Paris and things like that. But that's not the case with Israel. First of all, the world, do you know there's only one nation that recognizes Jerusalem as the capital of Israel? And that's Costa Rica.
Oh.
Yeah, Costa Rica has its embassy in Jerusalem.
Wow.
And the United States does not. The United States Embassy is in Tel Aviv.
Right.
So now
there was talk that, and I don't know how much stock we can put into this, but there was talk that Trump was going to be perhaps changing that or looking to change that, much like Costa Rica.
Yes. And he is adamant about it, and the person who he appointed to be the ambassador is his personal attorney. His last name is Friedman, and they're making plans to go ahead and change the embassy or move the embassy from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem. And the Arabs, the Palestinians and Hamas and all said that it will be an act of war. But getting back to what I was saying, Israel was in existence, 3,000 years ago. And 2,600 years ago, the Babylonians sieged Jerusalem. They conquered the city. They killed unknown numbers, huge numbers. And the ones they didn't kill, except for a tiny remnant, they brought back to Babylon. And that should have been the end of Israel. Because that's what conquering nations did. And they would assimilate those people into their culture, and you would never hear of them again. But there's prophecies in the Bible. Well, first of all, it was the prophets warned that this would happen to Israel. And then there's prophets that warned that the Jews would come back from Babylon, which they did. And they rebuilt their nation. Everything was rebuilt except the kingdom was taken away. They no longer had a king, but they were under like the Babylonians and then the Persians and then the Greeks and then the Romans. They never did have their own king again. But in 600 years later, in 70 A.D., the Romans did the same thing. They destroyed Israel. They destroyed Jerusalem. They destroyed the temple worship, which the Babylonians had done. They cast the Jews into all the world, except for a remnant. There was always a small remnant left back in Israel. And for approximately 1,900 years, there was no nation of Israel. The language had become extinct. It was only used in rituals. And here we are now, back. We're in the year 2016, almost 2017, and Israel's a nation. Jerusalem's the capital. They speak Hebrew again, very similar to ancient Hebrew, and they even have shekels for money. This is right out of the Bible, Doug. There is no other nation like Israel. There is none. The United States, we're like, you can't even, we go back to, we'll say, 1776. Israel goes back to 1000 B.C. And English, you can hardly read English back in the 1700s. The letters are different. You know, the letters are shaped different than they are now. It's very difficult to read English. And here, they pretty well can read ancient English. It's a little hard for them. I mean, ancient Hebrew, excuse me. It's a little hard, but they can read ancient Hebrew, so at the time of the Lord. So you got to look at the spiritual underpinnings of modern Israel. And once you do that, then a whole new world opens up of what's going on politically here, because the spiritual forces behind what's going on politically.
Very interesting when you look at ancient times to current times. So there are some parallels to what you're saying, John. Obviously, some close parallels.
Well, yeah, but what I'm after actually more than the ancient times is the Bible prophecy by the prophets written. Well, the Lord Himself commented on Israel being dispersed and coming back into the land. But Zechariah, for example, 500 BC, 2,500 years ago, prophesied about the Jews coming back into the land. Ezekiel, 2,600 years ago, prophesied the same thing, and many of the other prophets. So I've heard people tell me, oh, that who cares about the Bible? It's, you know, it was written 2,000, 3,000 years ago. It's not relevant for today. Yes, it is. Sure. Yes, it is. You can open up. Well, we don't look at newspapers too much anymore. I don't look at them at all. I'm online all the time. I get my news sources online. But you could open up a newspaper like in the old days and open it up and look to the UN saying something about Jerusalem and Israel, war in the Middle East, Jerusalem, Israel, and you can open up Zechariah chapter 12 and chapter 14, and there it is. It's talking about the Jews being back in the land. In fact, there's one verse I'd like to just share with you in Zechariah chapter 12. The whole chapter is about Jerusalem. Jerusalem. And it says here, in that day I will make the governors. Now, that's the day that the Jews are back in the land. Like a hearth of fire among the wood, and like a torch of fire in a sheath. And they shall devour all people round about on the right hand and on the left. And Jerusalem shall be inhabited again in her own place, even in Jerusalem. Mm. Now that was written 2,500 years ago by the prophet Zechariah.
Okay. Yeah, I was looking in your book here as you're speaking. I see a lot of references, a lot of biblical references, including Zechariah. Okay. Wow. All right, John. Well, how did this all start? I mean, right now, John, here we are in 2016. We're hundreds of years after America's founding. We are supposed to be Israel's best friend in the Middle East, or Israel is supposed to be our best friend in the Middle East. We just threw him under the bus. Now, this is not the first time, but I would stipulate this is the first time, however, that this has happened with what I would call motive and forethought. You know, I mean, this was intentional. This is an intentional backstabbing, and in my view. But there have been other times in American history this has happened. But going back to the first Zionist conference back in 1897, I mean, there's been a lot. I mean, Israel has got a rich history. Let me even step back one step further here, because we're going to have a lot of people saying, well, Israel is a creation of a Zionist political movement. How do you answer people like that? Israel is title deeded to, by God, to the Jews, right? I mean, biblically speaking, this land is to God, or by God to the Jews, from God to the Jews.
Yeah. There are many scriptures about this, and I'm going to just read one verse there to show you this. It's from Genesis chapter 17. It's verse 7 and 8, and God speaking to Abraham. It's recorded as God speaking to Abraham. I will establish my covenant between me and you and your seed, or your descendants after you, and in their generations, for an everlasting covenant, to be a God unto you and to your seed after you. And I will give to you, and again, your seed after you. And this is very important, because God is over and over and over saying that this is not for Abraham only, but this is for his descendants down through time.
All right.
The land wherein you are a stranger, or the land of Canaan, for an everlasting possession, and I will be their God. So I want to add to this that later on, God gave the Jews the law under Moses. And what the law was sort of the, in modern terms, I'm going to say it was like the constitution to live in the law that God had given them.
Okay.
So in our terms, let's say in 1776, God said to the Continental Congress and George Washington, I'm giving you the land of America here, and I'm also giving you a constitution of laws to go by. And if you keep those laws, you'll stay in this land like for forever.
Right.
If you don't keep those laws, I'm going to throw you out. And that is for witness to the world about the authority of my word and my righteousness and holiness. So that's what God did with Abraham way back approximately 4,000 years ago. But then the law of Moses came roughly, we're going to say, 1500 BC, which of course the Jews couldn't keep the law, and they were expelled from the land. This is all prophesied in the law, but it also says, because of that everlasting covenant, I will bring you back into the land.
Hmm.
I'm going to bring you back into the land. So the Jews back in the land, with Jerusalem as their capital, has nothing to do with them having sort of special favor with God or having their armies, because they had no armies, you know,
right,
or intelligence or anything. This is a sovereign act of God, and it is going to precede the second coming of Jesus Christ. See, there is, you can't just look at Israel and say, oh, well, the Jews this, the Jews that, yeah, and you know how terrible they are. I mean, you hear all this stuff, and they're not, that's, most of it's nonsense. God has a plan, and he has a plan for the salvation of mankind, and it involved in of Israel. So we're watching this unfold right in front of our very eyes.
So, okay, and you are, well, even more basic than any of this, if a person watching these events does not believe in the Bible, does not believe in God's, he's not the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. If that person does not believe in that God, they're going to have a difficult time understanding any of this. Is that a fair statement?
Well, yes and no. I think initially it is, but how do you people? All right, let me rephrase that. People have asked me, prove the Bible's the Word of God. Prove God exists. And I'll say, okay, fine. Here's what you do. You buy a ticket to David Ben-Gurion Airport in Tel Aviv. You fly over. You get in a bus or take a taxi to Jerusalem. You'll see the Jews. You'll hear them speaking Hebrew. Jerusalem is the capital. That's about all the proof you need. Because if you get in, probability of this happening, it's infinitesimal by accident. You'd have to, for what we see now in Israel, for what we see right there now, you had to have World War One. First of all, you had to have anti-Semitism to start the Zionist movement, which you alluded to earlier.
Right.
That has to. Then you have to have World War One, where I say, when you look at history, World War One was preparing the land for the Jews, because the Jews were not in any big hurry to go back to Israel. They were comfortable in Europe for the most part, or at least in Western Europe. And it was very rugged to go back to what we call Israel today. It was Palestine then. I mean, it was malaria-infested swamps. There was virtually no forest. The Ottoman Turks had cut down every tree. Nothing grew there. It didn't rain. So it wasn't... There was no reason to go there. But then we have World War II and what the Nazis did, and you had a huge influx of Jews from North Africa. You had about 1 million because they were driven out of, not only North Africa, but Iraq was involved, primarily North Africa. and then you had another 100, probably 500,000 or so from Western Europe, or Europe, I should say, escaping what had happened, and that is what spawned the modern state of Israel.
Okay.
So these huge, it took world wars to create the modern state of Israel. Now, Hitler did what he did to them, and almost 3 years to the day, Hitler died the first week in, well, that is arguments whether he did or didn't, but the war ended, let's put it that way, with the Nazis, the first week in May of 1945, and in the second week of May 1948, Israel's a nation.
Mm-hmm.
They went through their worst time when a third of the Jews were killed, 6 million, 7 million of them, and then 3 years later, Israel's a nation. Then they're attacked immediately by six Arab armies that were British trained, by the way. Do you mind if I diverge into some history? Because it's very unique history that people should know.
No, feel free. We've got about 5 minutes to the bottom of the hour. And you feel free to diverge any way you want to. This is good stuff.
Good stuff. All right. Well, what happened was the British have a real bad history with the Jews. And they did everything they could to prevent the rebirth of the nation of Israel, including supplying huge amounts of equipment to what was called Transjordan, which today is Jordan, and King Abdullah the First. They trained his army. They gave him Spitfire planes and British machine guns and all of that. And they blockaded the Jews that they couldn't get anything in. So they really, really gave the modern state of Israel a hard time. But Golda Meir came here to the United States in the right after World War II, and she went through the United States and raised somewhere in the neighborhood of about $80 million. And in Europe, there was surplus Nazi equipment. So Czechoslovakia sold Messerschmitt airplanes to Israel, along with the German machine guns and rifles and pistols and whatever other equipment, some artillery pieces and all. So the Israeli army, when they fought for independence, were using Nazi equipment. Now, isn't that bizarre? They took the Messerschmitt and painted over the Nazi insignia and put in the Star of David. And the British supplied the Arab armies with Spitfires and British machine guns and all. And the air war was the Jews flying Nazi Messerschmitts and the Arabs flying British Spitfires. It's bizarre. And this is a very little known fact in history, but the commander of the Israeli army was an American. His name was Mickey Marcos. I was an American Jew, and he was brilliant, and he's the one that formed what we call today Special Forces. They formed them in World War II, and he trained the Special Forces and actually set the structure up. He was also a lawyer, and he was the one that set up the Nuremberg trials against the Nazis. The Israelis came to the United States and asked him to lead the army. At first he said no, then he said yes. He was in the reserves at that time, so the American military wouldn't let him fight under the name Mickey Marco. So he used the name, I think, Stone. That was his stage name. But so the Israeli army was trained in American special forces tactics. So it wasn't necessarily by chance that they won that war. They were well trained by Mickey Marcos, who was the man that originated special forces in the United States. The tragedy is that on the day of the armistice, he went out to overlook the Arab positions to make sure that they weren't going to attack the next day. When he came back, there was a change of guards, and he was shot and killed. The guard spoke Hebrew and he didn't. And he shot and killed him, and he was buried in West Point. He's the only soldier that I'm aware of that's buried at West Point that died fighting for another nation. And I said that to tell you the closeness, the close bonding between the United States and the Jewish people, and then the nation of Israel, that really never existed with any other nation. We are unique amongst nations, the way we, from starting from George Washington. I've got quotes in my book from George Washington that are incredible. Abraham Lincoln, very, very, very fond of the Jewish people. Abraham Lincoln had Jews in his campaign and advisors. George Washington's aide-de-camp was a Jew. His surgeon at the doctor at Valley Forge was a Jew. Teddy Roosevelt. And, you know, we've had a wonderful interaction with the Jewish people, and then starting with Harry Truman and the recognition of the State of Israel back in May of 1948. So the early roots there with the Nation of Israel are really intertwined with America.
Man. Folks, you're listening to John McTiernan, his book, As America Has Done to Israel. Check this out. Okay, now this was not written last year. Okay, it's a couple of years old, but it has the information, the backstory, the backdrop for what is taking place today. Asked him to come on short notice. Thank you so much, JD, for arranging all of this. Asked him to come on short notice. He did. He's going to be with us for the next, until the top of the second hour. He's got a wealth of information. Folks, you're listening to the Hagman Report. Can be right back. Stay right where you're at. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to this edition of the Hagman and Hagman Report. Our very special guest, Mr. John McTiernan. His book is As America Has Done to Israel. Folks, it's not a new book. It's a couple of years old, but let me tell you something. It is critical. If you want to understand, for example, what is going on with respect to current events in Israel and how the actions of America's leaders affects the actions of America's leaders with what they do to Israel affects the trajectory of America. And it does. It's biblically prophetic, obviously, and rooted in scripture. But if you want to understand it, you've got this to me is perhaps the best work on the subject. It's the most comprehensive I've ever read. And I picked it up this weekend to read this again, and I've had this in my possession for some time. And I just found this more valuable today than ever before. And you can get this if you go to HagmanReport.com, open up the article for tonight, the story for tonight, the show prep promo for tonight, and you can click on exactly where to purchase this book. Now, you can hurry, because I know on Amazon there's limited quantities in stock. However, we've got alternatives on our website too for you to get this book, because and this will give you the necessary ground that you need to cover, that you need to understand, that is on Israel. Now, we were talking just briefly.
Thank you for doing that, Doug. I may add, the book is 10 years old, and it is it's a very good seller. It's an excellent seller. Because it never grows old. You know, the things that are in the book, it's never outdated.
Yeah.
So I wrote things in there 10 years ago, but I was actually preaching it 10 years before that about Iran, the Shiite Sunni civil war, which we're seeing now, a caliphate forming against Israel, things like that. I've been preaching that for 20 years, and it's unfolding right. It's unfolding right before our eyes as I'm speaking.
You know, John, how they have the nuclear countdown clock, or, you know, 5 minutes to midnight, 3 minutes to midnight, whatever that clock is. I was going through this book this weekend in light of what happened this on December 23rd. I believe the hands of God's prophetic clock, Israel as its timepiece, was just moved a lot closer to midnight. just so people understand, on Friday, December 23rd, the United Nations Security Council Resolution 2334 was adopted under Chapter 6 of the United Nations Charter, and it concerns Israeli settlements in, quote, Palestinian territories occupied since 1967. Now, folks, you can research this resolution online, but this also includes East Jerusalem. And by the way, Jerusalem is talked about right here in John's book as well, and in the context, even in the context of this. So the passage of this resolution was only made possible by Obama, Barack Hussein Obama, let me add, failing to veto the resolution, essentially throwing Israel under the bus via Samantha Power, the U.S. Ambassador, U.N. Ambassador. Now, having said that, John, what are the ramifications here? Let's go from here, and we can branch out into different categories.
Yeah, first of all, I'd like to give a little setting of this. I follow events in the Middle East, and especially about Israel, every day. I have a blog, and I blog about this. I mean, you have my book, and I mean, I'm absorbed in it about as much as anybody can be. And this vote that you talked about came out of no place. It wasn't like scheduled a month in advance or 2 months in advance. It just seemed to come out of no place. And the vote was supposed to be Thursday, and the one that put it on the table was Egypt. The nation that put it on the table was Egypt. Donald Trump got involved. Netanyahu contacted Donald Trump, the president-elect, and asked him to intercede, because he knew that Obama was behind this, and Obama was going to let it go through. So Trump did. He contacted the Egyptians, and the Egyptians withdrew the resolution that they had put on the table to be voted on. Obama then did an end run, and he got the New Zealand, Venezuela, and two other countries to reinstitute the resolution, which they did, and they voted on it Friday. So you could see, Doug, the rush to get this done. This was unprecedented. Now, it's not unusual for the nations to gang up on Israel. What is unusual is the United States was always there to block their ganging up on Israel. And this time, what Obama did was the United States didn't vote. So all the other nations, this was in the Security Council, not the General Assembly. So 14 members of the Security Council voted for this measure, and the United States abstained, and it passed. Now, what it does, there's so many angles on this of what it does. Number one, it automatically, as far as the United Nations goes, makes any land that Israel is occupied after 1967 illegal. It's illegal. So that opens up Israel for Hamas and the PLO and Hezbollah and all these groups to say, well, we're going to war with Israel now because they've illegally occupied this land, and we are going to defend, you know, the Palestinians against Israel. So number one, it does that. Number two, it opens up Israel to lawsuits, where they can now take Israel to the world court, and they can sue Israel for having land and or having land buildings and settlements in these areas. Number three, it opens up Israel to the BDS movement, boycott, diverse, and sanction. And this is vicious. This is I call them the hard left. The hard left is behind this in the United States, in the universities, in Europe especially, where they want to target anything coming from Israel that's made in what we call the West Bank, but actually the Bible calls it Judea and Samaria. But that's just the start. That's just the start where they want to come after Israel. So that's just off the top of my head what this has done by what the United States fostered promoted, encouraged, and supported. This is unprecedented because it's delegitimizing Israel and really opening Israel up to now violence and wars. And anybody that supports Israel will be, in the eyes of the United Nations, will be supporting an illegal entity. So, but it's beyond that now. The French are involved, and there's supposed to be, don't hold me to it, but I believe it's January 10th, there's going to be another meeting. It's somewhere around there. And what Israel is really concerned with, this is going to be the French and the United States together, that they're going to codify the land where they say is Israel and then what's occupied. So they're going to like put a map together and draw the map and say, okay, everything across this line is illegal. And that'll be it. There's no negotiations. There's no anything anymore. So Israel will have to face like world condemnation if they don't go along with this. So this is about as serious as it can get, Doug. And the one thing also that's very serious, it divides Jerusalem, and it takes the old city of Jerusalem, where the Western Wall is and the Temple Mount, and it takes it away from Israel, and it gives it to the Palestinians. Now, Israel has annexed that already, and Israel has annexed the Golan Heights already. And this is unsustainable. Israel cannot allow this. It can't for its own survival. Israel cannot survive if it goes back to those borders. It can't. And I've been talking for a while, so if you want to interrupt, please go ahead. I want to explain next how we got to this situation of the pre-67 borders and what this means, because anything Israel did is not illegal. I want to make that clear to your listeners. I can explain how it happened.
Yeah, John, let me tell you something. People can hear me talk anytime, but you're the invited guest. I'd prefer if you talk. The only thing I want to say is this. United Nations Security Council Resolution 465, which this builds upon, I think if I'm correct, this goes back to 1980, 79-ish, 80, really affects Jerusalem, the Gaza Strip, Golan Heights, East Jerusalem, that is. This is huge. So, like I said, people can listen to me anytime. You go ahead and take this, brother. You've got the floor.
All right. I don't know where to begin because I am in my mind. I'm saying, okay, the listener should know this, but they should know this and they should know this. So we'll just start someplace and if we have to back up with more information, I will. It was actually November of 1947 when the UN recognized Israel as a nation, and it was official in May of 1948, and that was because they had to wait for the British to withdraw. So when the British had completely withdrew, they turned it all over to Israel. Now Israel was tiny. Doug, it was a little tiny strip of land, really. And the Arab armies, the Arabs had said that if Israel became a nation, they were going to attack, which they did on May 15th. On May 14th, Harry Truman recognized the State of Israel. And once he recognized the State of Israel, I called it the baby was born, and it couldn't be turned because there were forces in the world that wanted to like abort the newborn State of Israel. No one thought they were going to win, but again, with the combination which I shared earlier of American leadership, American funds, and Nazi equipment, and God's hand, they won. And what they did was, not only did they win, but they expanded the land. So they expanded it to an armistice in 1949, and in that armistice it's called the pre-67 borders, and Jerusalem was cut, we'll roughly say, in half. So that's the way it remained from 1949 till 1967, and three Arab armies attacked Israel again. The Egyptians, the Jordanians, and the Syrians. And I don't want to go into the details of it. All I can tell you that Israel was justified in the war. Israel won the war handily. They annihilated the Egyptian army. They annihilated the Syrian army. They drove the Jordanians out of what we call the West Bank today, back to Jordan. And by the way, there never was a Palestinian nation ever in history. There never was. Israel was, or Jerusalem was, never the capital of any country except Israel. And during the Arab rule, and especially the Ottoman Turks, the main country in that, the main city in that area was Damascus. Jerusalem was a side issue. All this stuff about how important Jerusalem is to the Muslims is nonsense. It's all propaganda, just to put pressure on Israel. It's so holy to the Muslims. It's nonsense. The sacred city for them was Damascus. Jerusalem was secondary. So Israel won. Israel won fair and square, and but they weren't able to take Jerusalem, and the city, the nation was carved like you kind of see today, which is the occupied territories. So, which is called the occupied territories. So it was the United Nations Resolution 242 that came out in 68, which said that a negotiation should be made between Israel and the Arabs, and that an Arab state should be created, but of primary importance was Israel's security, and it had to be worked out between them. So there is no law of any type that says Israel has to go back to the 67 borders. That's all made up today. That never was like that. After the war, the United Nations recognized Israel needed security. So that's what the negotiations have been about for decades. And the problem was the Palestinians didn't want really a Palestinian state. They wanted to keep this as a raw wound to destroy the state of Israel. That's what they want. They want Jerusalem as their capital. Well, it never was their capital. There never was a Palestinian state. Never. So what Israel ended up doing was giving back 90% of the land it gained in the 67 war. Everybody forgets that today, Doug. But the Sinai belonged to Israel, and they gave it to Egypt. The Golan Heights, way more than Israel has now, was given back to Syria when they were attacked. You know, and Israel gained this as a result of war. Jordan did not want the West Bank back. Jordan had taken the West Bank illegally, by the way. But Israel, Jordan didn't want it. It renounced any claim to the West Bank. So Israel annexed the portion of the Golan Heights that they had given back to, which they did not give back to Syria, because this is mind-boggling, and I don't know if your listeners are aware of this, but prior to the 67-day war, Syria came right down to the Sea of Galilee. Syria's border was, and that's what the UN wants to give Syria now. Syria, how can you give Syria like all this land that's Israel's now when Syria is at war? Who knows who's going to be in charge? Is it going to be ISIS? Is it going to be Iran? Are the Ayatollahs going to move their army into Syria? Assad is still talking about destroying Israel, the state of his country. He's still talking about destroying Israel. Hezbollah is there. They are setting up Israel to be destroyed. That's what they've done with
them. Wow.
So Israel gave back all that land. It gave 90% of the land back from a war which they were attacked. And now the United Nations has come out and said you've got to go to the 67 borders, which is national suicide for Israel. They cannot do it, including dividing Jerusalem. Israel is never going to do this. This is a prescription of national suicide. It can't do it, but Israel is justified in this. Israel was attacked. The land that Israel has now, that they're claiming is a Palestinian state, came from war, which Israel was attacked, and Israel has no requirements to go back to the 67 borders because there was no requirement other than work a deal out between Israel and the Palestinians to create a Palestinian state. So this is just raw power now by the United Nations Security Council, backed up by the United States. And I believe because Netanyahu really stood up to Obama. Do you remember, I think it was it, I can't remember the year now, 2011? No, it was 2013, when Obama came, excuse me, when Netanyahu came and he spoke to a joint session of Congress.
Yeah. Yes. Yes, go on.
Yeah. Well, Obama really snubbed him.
Yep.
And he gave
yep.
a speech the day before. Really, in that speech, it was an eye-popper for me, because that speech really goes along with what he just did to Israel now, about the borders, and that the United States doesn't recognize Jerusalem as the capital, and East Jerusalem the capital of a Palestinian state, and all. He gave that speech, and there was no need for him to give that speech other than thwarting, other than like insulting Obama, who has come, excuse me, I'm getting Obama and Netanyahu mixed up. insulting Netanyahu, who was invited before a joint session of Congress, and he was going to speak about the Iranian deal and how dangerous it was and how bad it was. So Obama is spiteful against Netanyahu. And you remember the first time he invited Netanyahu to the White House, he kept literally brought him in the back door. And he went to dinner, and he left Obama, he left Netanyahu in some room by himself, while him and his family. Do you remember that? Yeah. I mean, never did we ever treat our worst enemy like that diplomatically. You know, there's certain protocol diplomatically. And then Netanyahu, he didn't have a photo op. He got him out the back door there. So that's from the very beginning. Obama, and this isn't surprising. I mean, Obama has the Muslim Brotherhood in the White House as yep. advisor. The State Department is riddled with the Muslim Brotherhood.
Yep.
Obama spoke with extreme. How about this one? Obama was in Reverend Wright's church for 20 years, and never once did he hear all that anti-Israel, anti-American rhetoric from Reverend Wright, and he had no idea that Farrakhan spoke in that church and was given an award, some humanitarian award, by Reverend Wright. Now, come on, 20 years you're in a church, and you have no idea that the church is honoring Louis Farrakhan?
Yeah.
And that's these tirades from the pulpit against Israel? So Obama has that in him from the very beginning, Doug. What we're seeing, what he did on Friday, I think he's been waiting for his entire presidency to do to Israel.
Can this be, okay, what happened, well, I got a couple of questions here. We're about 5 minutes out from the break here, but, let me back up because I got an email here. I want to share this email with you because I've been getting, John, I've been getting more and more of these emails, and it disturbs me, and it really hurts my heart. And I don't know if that's, folks, I mean, you know, you might say, well, that's just really hyperbole, but stuff like this, I don't really understand this. This is from Gary, and Gary writes this: I watch your show all the time. However, I'm shocked by your support for Israel. I think as a Christian, if you moved there, you would change your mind completely, as Jews wouldn't show you one ounce of respect. Now, okay, you take those words and you change them around a little bit, but the sentiment is like that. Before the top of the hour, John, there's so much of this. I've been seeing this where we've got no business supporting Israel. Israel is not a friend of the United States, and on and on and on and on. But these are on the rise, John. Can you speak to that sentiment?
Sure. Do you want to speak now, or is it after the break?
Well, I'll tell you what. We got about 4 minutes. If we can accomplish it now, that'd be great. 3.5 minutes?
Yeah, sure. Now, first of all, if you look at it from a religious point of view, and you understand Bible prophecy, and I can show the scriptures, Doug, if you feel it's necessary, but God makes it very clear that the Jews are coming back in unbelief. For the most part, Israel is a secular state. There is an Orthodox section there. But Israel is a secular state. And the Bible makes it clear that at the second coming of Jesus Christ, there'll be a national turning to Israel. I'm looking at the scriptures right here from Zechariah, which says this. And Ezekiel says this very, very clearly. Ezekiel has a whole chapter on it. Israel is coming back in unbelief. Israel is back in the land in unbelief. Even by Jewish standards, Orthodox Jewish standards, you could probably make a case for that, that it's more of a secular Jewish state. Now, the second thing is, what I think, is this guy named Gary?
Gary, right.
Okay. Give me a good reason, Gary, why the Jews should like Christians. Give me a good reason. If you're in Israel, who gives them a hard time? But see, they lump it all together, Doug. Who gives it? The Roman Catholic Church, the Greek Orthodox Church, the Russian Church. Then you have the hard left church here in America, like the Presbyterians and the Methodists. They go over there and they support the Palestinians against them. If you look at, and they look at history, the Jews aren't able to distinguish things that like we can, but they look at like sort of a Christian history, and they say, look what you've done to us in the name of Christ. So why should they? You follow, Doug, what I'm saying?
Yeah, 100%. And it's more... Yeah, go ahead.
Put their shoes. And then you'll see. So what the Apostle Paul says, that we are supposed to have such a great love for the Jews that we provoke them in a good sense. We provoke them in a good sense about our love. So are we showing the love to the Jews that the Apostle Paul says we should do? And there is substantial believers in Israel, Jewish believers. There is a substantial group of them now. It's a growing movement. And Israel will, you're allowed to worship the Lord in Israel, and they don't really persecute you. They might, some of them might like you. But and you're allowed to the word they use is proselytize. You're allowed to be evangelical except for children. You can't talk to children. So Israel, and now if you want to talk about persecution and you're not liked, go to Mecca. Go to Rehob. Yeah, Tehran. Yeah, that's where you should go. It's mild in Israel. It's mild. If they don't like Christians in Israel, it's usually an individual thing. It's not the Israeli government.
Got it.
And they're beginning to see very, very clearly that the evangelical church, although, Doug, you're right, there is a move now, I don't know what you want to call it. There is a move, though, amongst the evangelicals against Israel. But they're understanding that they're...
John, I'm going to stop you right there. We're at the break. I apologize for this, but this is a good stopping point, actually. And you make some very good points. Your perception's accurate. Folks, you're listening to the Hagman Report. Stay right where you're at. Give us 3.5 minutes. Right back.